Hi, this is Chris Kepler with Does This Happen to You? The podcast where we explore the more bizarre ways of getting through your day. This week, we continue with the Oh My God series. And here is episode 33, Tasting at Gosset, from The Drunken Cyclist, a blog on WordPress. In the previous episode, number 32, I was to meet the group at Moët et Chandon in Épernay for a tour. That was to take exactly an hour, and a single flute of rather mediocre champagne. The entire group was a no-show, except Oh My God. Surprisingly, the tour was not all that eventful until the end, when Oh My God, who had not caused an international incident for days, decided to shake things up a bit. I beat the tour guide to Oh My God, and much like an embarrassed parent, I was both mortified to be associated with him and furious at him for causing the spectacle. I was able to extract the bottle from his grubby mitts after a brief struggle. I am pretty sure that he initially did not realize that it was me trying to pry his newfound toy from his grasp. But once he looked up and saw my incensed gaze, he capitulated immediately, as if he had been caught trying to grab an extra chocolate chip cookie from the jar. I handed the bottle back to the tour guide, who tried to simultaneously show her appreciation, astonishment, and sympathy with a wry smile and a nod of the head. As she replaced the now quite cloudy bottle on its backlit display, she was visibly shaking her head, and I do believe I heard her mutter, "Mon Dieu," repeatedly. I glanced down at my watch and saw that it was already 10:40. The tour, which the cashier told me would last exactly 1 hour, had now rolled comfortably past the limit, and we had yet to get to the end, the flute of champagne. I motioned to the guide that I needed to leave, using the universally accepted signal of pointing at my watch, to which she nodded and indicated the way out of the cave. I hustled through the well-marked path, then bolted through the tasting room where they were filling the flutes for our soon-to-be-approaching group and into the gift shop. As I paused for some reason at the door, one of the gift shop salespeople asked, in English, "Did you enjoy the champagne?" I told her that, in fact, I did not have my allotted flute, and as I was about to add that I was running short on time, she interjected, "Well, you must go back. Moët et Chandon is the best champagne in the world." I stood there for what seemed like a minute, but was likely only a couple seconds, contemplating my response. For a moment I thought I would challenge her assertion with a snarky retort in English, since that was the language in which she chose to address me. But snark is often lost on non-native speakers. I then considered replying with an appropriately snarky comment in French, but then I realized it was almost 11 o'clock, which is pretty close to noon, and I was thirsty. For bubbles. And I was in champagne. What was I thinking? I rushed back into the tasting room, hoping to get there before the group, and I did. I thrust my hand into my pocket, grabbing the silly ticket that I received upon entering Moët that I needed to give to the tasting room attendant for my flute. I considered trying to convince him to provide me a nice little upgrade, perhaps a little of the 2006 millésime. While the standard non-vintage Brut Moët is, at best, pedestrian, their vintage wines certainly show more character and intrigue. But I was pressed for time, and more to the point, he was no doubt trained in the fine French art of following the rules. I handed him my ticket, as if I were at some country fair, and he handed me a flute of Moët et Chandon Imperial. I sniffed, sipped, swirled, and then sucked it down. It was not bad, but I realized I still had time to make my 11 o'clock appointment at Gosset, so need to perseverance. I carefully placed the flute on the bar and not bothering to record the reaction of the attendant to my chugging of the wine, I am sure he at least rolled his eyes mentally, if not outwardly. I spun on my heels, charged through the gift shop, hopped on my bike, and was about to speed over to go say when I saw Oh My God's bike. I had forgotten that he had completely destroyed his front wheel when he crashed into the statue of Dom Pérignon. There was no possible way that he would be able to ride on that wheel, so I did what any good cycling tour guide would do. I took out a pen and a piece of paper from my notepad, both of which I keep neatly stored in my fanny pack, don't judge, and left him a quickly drawn map as to where he needed to go to get a new wheel. He was, after all, responsible for the accident, and so the burden of replacement fell firmly on him. As I added a note describing where I would be and that I would come back in an hour or two to check on him, I did start to feel a bit guilty. Here I was, leaving perhaps the most helpless 49-year-old on the planet in the Mouet et Chandon parking lot. But not that guilty. I decided not to think about him any more until after the Gosset visit. I know it was rather callous of me, but, well, he was going to probably find another way to ruin my day sooner than I thought possible, so I was taking out a little payback in advance. With Oh My God being suppressed to the back of my mind, I glanced at my watch. It was now just before 11 o'clock, and I was worried I was going to be late. And since I know how the French are keen on punctuality, I saddled up and rode up the Avenue de Champagne. Gosset is only about a kilometer, about 0.6 miles from Mouet, but it took me the better part of 5 minutes, since most of the distance is a healthy climb. In the middle of the ride, I discovered that it is not the best idea to slam down a flue de champagne, no matter how mediocre, before embarking on a fairly steep incline. I pulled into the Gosset parking lot right about 10:55, and after locking up my bike, I ventured inside. There, I discovered that I was not 5 minutes early, but rather, I was 20 minutes late. My appointment was for 10:30, not 11 o'clock. Uh-oh. I knew I was about to get a lecture, or certainly a series of disgusted looks and eye rolls, if not a typical American under-the-breath comment. I braced myself. Nothing. I was shocked. The French rarely waste the opportunity to let you know that you are in gross violation of a rule. They rarely do anything about it, but they want to let you know beyond any shred of doubt that you were in the wrong. This time, nada. In fact, the woman at reception could not have been nicer. She provided me with a flute of Gosset Brut Excellence, their entry-level wine, as I waited for my guide. I was rather excited about visiting Gosset, since even though it is the oldest winery in Champagne, established in 1584, and I had been to Champagne countless times, I had never actually been to the house that makes my favorite non-vintage Brut, the Grand Reserve. Up until 2009, the whole Gosset operation was about 6 kilometers outside of Epernay in Ailly, and they did not seem to take kindly to visitors. Several summers ago, I decided to stop by the house in Ailly unannounced. With the temperature in the mid-30s Celsius, well into the 90s Fahrenheit, I rolled up to the house and knocked on the door. Despite the short ride to get there from Epernay, I was a sweaty mess, decked out in lycra, with helmet, head in full effect. I parked my bike and walked up to the front door in my cycling shoes, trying to keep it classy. I rang the bell and waited. I waited a good long while, and just as I decided to climb back down the stairs and hit the road, the door creaked open. I turned and explained, in my best French, I have to say it was pretty good, that I was perhaps their biggest fan, and rolled all the way from the U.S., hence my regrettable appearance, to come visit Gosset. The silly, self-effacing humor always gets them. The man who answered the door looked me over, smiled, and said, "We do not normally accept visitors. Do you have an appointment?" I sheepishly said, "No." He then closed the door. I stood there for a while, a bit stunned, thinking he might open the door again and say, "Except for you, get in here, knucklehead." That did not happen. Disappointed, I eventually climbed back on my bike and made my way up to Reims. Thus, I was particularly excited to be visiting Gosset, albeit in Epernay instead of Aix. A few minutes after I arrived, my guide came out to greet me, and I instantly recognized him. It was Jean-Paul Grignoli, whom I had met a couple of years prior at a tasting back in the U.S. He had been over, promoting Gosset, and we had spoken for close to an hour at the time. When I made the reservation for the tasting in Epernay, I did not think about mentioning him, but I was certainly glad to see him. Just as I was about to shake his hand and reference our prior meeting, the front door opened, and in strolled, not Oh My God, fortunately, but the next best thing, Anne and Ellen. Before I had time to ponder how the remainder of my morning just took a turn for the worse, Maggie followed the two in the door. I actually hoped that Paul and Cece would then stroll through, as it would certainly lessen the blow. If it were not for Oh My God, I think Anne and Ellen on a trip would be enough to classify it as a nightmare. And then there was Maggie. I had not spoken to her since I ignored the note she had left me imploring me to visit her room late at night. This was lining up to be a swell couple of hours. I went over to the three of them and tried to put on my best face. Although I was already going to tour guide hell for leaving Oh My God stranded, I probably could have simply ignored them and suffered no worse fate. Anne indicated that they had heard me talk about the appointment the night before. I need to keep my enormous bouche shut. And since they missed the Mouette visit, they thought they would glom on to this one instead. I then turned to Maggie to see if she had a different story, but before my eyes even met hers, she quickly glanced away as if she were a wounded puppy. I knew I was going to have to confront that later, but I really had no desire. There were just two more nights left on her portion of the trip, so I was debating just writing it out and ignoring her altogether. Jean-Paul was slightly taken aback by the new additions to the tour, but he took it in stride, and we were soon on our way on a tour of the facility. A few years after my rather ignominious visit, the company, which had been in Aix for 425 years, purchased the property in Epernay in 2009. This new property had most recently housed Champagne Jean-Mer and previously Champagne Drouillard, but the house was originally built by mass retailer Félix Pontin to supply his stores with its own champagne. The new property gives Gosset much larger production facilities and storage capabilities. The caves on the property can hold up to 2.5 million bottles, as compared to less than a million previously. The company will maintain the IE property, but most of the production and day-to-day operations are now in Epernay. While the house is still not technically open to the public, the larger facility enables them to welcome visitors by appointment in the former Chateau Malakoff on the grounds. After a brief introduction to Gosset, we delved down into the caves, which were relatively new. They were built in the 19th century. As we emerged from the caves, Jean-Paul led us through several of the Gosset wines, explaining that most of the fruit that goes into the champagnes comes almost exclusively from Grand Cru and Premier Cru vineyards, the two highest designations of quality in champagne. He also pointed out that none of the wines that goes into Gosset champagnes goes through a malolactic fermentation, the transformation of malic acid into lactic acid, so that the champagnes retain their vibrant acidity. Malic acid, think apples, is much more acidic than the result of malolactic acid fermentation. Lactic acid, think milk. At this point, both Anne and Ellen, who had been very attentive and, honestly, model visitors, completely checked out. Since we were tasting the wines adjacent to the modest gift shop, they were wandering over there quite a bit with their flutes. I attempted to keep an eye on them, but I had my hands full with Maggie, who, with each successive pour, which were quite generous, by the way, was inching closer and closer to me. I was trying my best to ignore all three of them by chatting up Jean-Paul and focusing on the wines. Good luck with that. At one point, I could have sworn that I saw Ellen slyly grab a champagne stopper and slip it into her jersey pocket without paying. But at that precise moment, Maggie pinched my butt. Now, the first incident I could not confirm, but the second, there was no doubt. Sure, this was my favorite champagne, but I was spitting and not drinking the wine. I know a butt pinch when I get one. I debated whether I should even acknowledge the indiscretion, but fearing that she would not relent, I shot her a glance. Stoic. I will give Maggie this much. She is likely a heck of a poker player. We still had a couple of wines to go, so I needed to act quickly. I called Ellen over, saying that she really needed to taste the next wine in the lineup, as it was one of my favorites. Ellen looked at me with a puzzled look on her face, as if to say, "Who, me?" She was right to be confused. I had not been able to even so as much stand next to her since I witnessed her climb up to Jouar and her adaptation of the Oscar Mayer Wiener song. Once she realized I was serious, I was not, in fact, serious. I just needed her as a buffer between the butt pincher and me. She shouted out, "No thanks, I find champagne rather boring." Ugh. Luckily, either since she had a desire to taste the next wine or was a bit embarrassed by her partner, Anne sauntered over to try the next wine. I positioned her between Maggie and me, and the rest of the tasting went off without a hitch or a pinch. All in all, it was one of the more memorable visits I had ever had in Champagne. We were there for close to 2 hours by the end. Jean-Paul had poured close to a dozen wines, most of them older vintages. I came outside to see one of the more frightening sights I had witnessed in a while. Oh My God's bike was attached to mine, with a brand new wheel, surprisingly. But as I scanned the property, he was nowhere to be found. Uh-oh. I started to panic a bit. I wanted to get on the road and out to Villers for my next tasting, but there was no way I could leave with Oh My God on the loose. I decided to hop on my bike and take a quick ride around to see if I could spot him. I could not help thinking that I was looking for Bigfoot. You would kind of like to find him, but then what? You would likely be in a much more difficult situation. Besides, given the length and matted appearance of his hair, his appearance closely matched how I imagined Sasquatch. After a few minutes, I found him spread-eagled on the lawn, much like Da Vinci's famous sketch, although Oh My God was not nude, thank goodness. I paused for a bit to ascertain if he was indeed breathing. He was. And I decided to once again leave rather quietly. Always let a sleeping Oh My God lay. As I was leaving, he came to, spotted me trying to escape, and called out for me to stop. I long ago gave up trying to partake in traditional discourse with Oh My God. I did not hide the fact that I was trying to get away from him as quickly as I could, as if it were a schoolyard game of tag. But sheer curiosity led me to ask, "Are you okay?" I realized that I already knew the answer to that question. In fact, I knew from the first day that I met him that he was far from okay, and that no matter what he said next, the best I could hope for was to extract myself from the conversation as quickly and painlessly as possible. Good luck with that. He then recounted what happened after I left him at Mouet. Briefly, it seems that he had quite a bit to drink, but not in the tasting room. There were a few other Canadians, also touring by bike, in the group, and once they realized he was of the same nationality, they insisted on taking him to a bar down the street. Yes, it was only 11 in the morning, but this was France, after all. There, according to Oh My God, he had several more flutes of champagne. They helped him back to his bike, and once they saw the condition of his wheel, they insisted that he take one of theirs as a replacement. It seemed that their group, unlike ours, had van support, and replacing the wheel would be no big ordeal. He then somehow managed to follow my map, which was shocking since Oh My God might be the only person I have ever met with a worse sense of direction than mine. Yes, it is a bit odd that I was serving as a tour guide with that glaring insufficiency, but that is another story. Regardless, there he was, and then he said this. I think I've had enough champagne. I am over the whole bubble thing. I stood there for a moment, contemplating my response. Eventually, I simply said, you know, there are bubbles in beer. Instantly, he turned rather pale, and I recoiled a few steps, for it looked as though he might get sick. Instead, he staggered to his feet and took off running towards his bike. Halfway across the lawn, he suddenly stopped and bent over his hands on his knees. After a brief pause, he stood upright and then arched his back so that his face was towards the sky, and belched. Just as Jean-Paul emerged from the building. Oh my God. I hope you enjoyed this story. Thanks so much for listening. And next week, we'll have another Does This Happen to You? Moment.